All right, I want to welcome everyone this morning. Good morning. My name is Charles Blackledge, and we're here for the session on grants for the benefits of homeless individuals, a cross-site evaluation. We have with us today Dr. Kristen Stainbrook, Dr. Alexander Cowell, and Dr. Nahama Broner. We're actually going to change the rotation of the slides today, and so Dr. Broner is going to go first, and she will go last as well. Dr. Broner is with RTI, and she is an associate professor at NYU. Dr.
Broner. Thank you. Again, my apologies that I ended up in the conference center. Thought I had prepared everything. So what I'm going to do is give you a bit of an overview of the evaluation that we designed for this study that will then, in some ways, contextualize the other presentations. And it was funded through SAMHSA on our evaluation grants to the benefit of homeless individuals, as well as a new contract that we've just begun. In addition to acknowledging the authors on this, we want to thank all the grantees, as well as the firms that were involved on the original evaluation of Danya Brandeis and Advocates for Human Potential, AHP. So the program itself, this is grants for the benefit of homeless individuals, which is funded through Congress, begun in 2001 to SAMHSA's Center for Substance Abuse Treatment, CSAT. It was funded in order to, in some ways, be an alternative to HUD funding, to think about linking folks to substance use and mental health treatment services with housing and other services. Again, focusing on those with substance use and mental health issues. It was to expand and strengthen treatment services for people who are homeless, and to increase the number of homeless people placed in stable housing and who receive treatment services for alcohol, drugs, and co-occurring disorders. About 210 grant programs were funded between 2000 and 2009. Another 23 were funded in 2010, and over 45,000 were served as of April. Those numbers obviously have gone up. The program is heterogeneous, clearly creates issues both from a treatment perspective, but also certainly from an evaluation perspective. In some ways, I think of it as a laboratory. It has had a number of different kinds of tracks for chronically homeless, for supportive services, different kinds of housing models, different types of populations of focus. And these were sort of three of the main tracks: chronic homeless, services for supportive housing, that generally follows, and we'll sort of hear about that more, a permanent supportive housing model, and a general treatment track, which does a lot of different things. It has a continuum from street homeless to housed. It does a more traditional kind of continuum of care focus. Some services are co-located in housing. Some services are separated. Grantees can also be a variety. They can be, in terms of their service organizations, they can be housing, they can be criminal justice, they can be a hospital, they can be a clinic, they can be a shelter. Some of them have a lot of treatment or services experience, and some of them have very little. Same thing with housing. Some have done work with housing, either providing it or supporting it or linking to it. Others have had none of those kinds of experiences. Just giving, we're going to go back and forth and sort of give you some 2009 cohort examples, part of our impact study where we got a little bit more in depth, and just gives you again a sense of the target populations: chronic homeless, general, at-risk, homeless families. Only one of the 25 projects focuses on men, four on women, and then there are these other kinds of subpopulations that, as you can imagine, affect the service configuration as well as the outcomes and the data collection. So families, veterans, inebriants, those with HIV, AIDS, criminal justice involved, youth or young adults. Generally, the programs, in order to be funded, have to agree either to directly or through referral provide outreach, screening, assessment, treatment, and support services such as case management, education, HIV testing, primary care, transportation, and so forth. Linkage to housing is also required, but that can be either by referral or if you're an SSH grantee, actually either supporting them in housing or getting them into housing. And housing, which was a challenge also with the evaluation, is very broadly defined. It can include transitional or residential treatment. It can be group homes, congregate, or what we may more collectively think about as somebody being housed in their own home. The kinds of benefits people receive or vouchers for housing also vary in terms of whether or not the individual can go forward with that into other kinds of housing or whether or not that stays with the project. The program has to include at least one service that's evidence-based practice, but again, the definition for an EBP is pretty broad and can include sort of the SAMHSA treatment improvement protocols and these kind of consensus documents as well. Just sort of a little difficult to read, but giving you a sense both of lack of saturation, but of some of the things that, let's say, in these 25 grantees, what they were doing. Majority of general and SSH, sort of talk about that a little bit more, but the grantees were implementing motivational interviewing, MET, stages of change, matrix. Several were doing trauma practices, sort of listed those. There's not one model that's more implemented than others, really. Integrated treatment, again, this program is with an emphasis on co-occurring disorders, so it's sort of interesting that there's, again, very little saturation of these techniques into the programs. And then other more mental health focused practices like DBT, ACT, etc. These are just some examples of what we call the non-clinical or the support services, evidence-based practices, various types of case management, some of the housing models, a number of HIV, AIDS, EBPs from the CDC, and some benefit-focused practices like SOAR. In terms of, so that gives you a little brief of the program and some of the challenges. But and also then some of the, you'll see with the outcomes, some of the terrific work people are doing given the variability. The in terms of the evaluation, we did some work prior to the award. We worked with a set of grantees and their evaluators through technical assistance, developing a framework and design, and so that we had some familiarity when we began. This evaluation was 2 years. We were funded in 2009, and the first year was primarily focused on evaluation design. And I think, again, in this kind of complexity, we were incredibly fortunate to have a diverse and smart and sort of diligent expert panel who did a lot of work for nothing. Who really helped us review and think through the design. We also reached out to the SAMHSA staff, to the branch chiefs, and others, and had everything reviewed. And we extensively reviewed whatever the grantees had submitted already to SAMHSA, including data, so that we really had a sense of how to design this. In year two, we piloted measures. We interviewed government project officers, we trained grantees, we did 25 site visits, data analysis, and dissemination. As a caveat, that evaluation, which was originally envisioned as a 5-year evaluation, was stopped. Its option year wasn't funded. And we applied for a new project. And as part of streamlining government and streamlining evaluations, SAMHSA decided to bring together an evaluation, enlarge it, of all of its homeless programs. So this evaluation that we're presenting today, interestingly, is now subsumed under the new evaluation. We're actually adding another cohort to it, along with several other programs. The programs of focus are CSAT's GBHI grant, Center for Mental Health Services, CMHS's SSH grant, CMHS's PATH, and a new grant program that just started this fall called CABI that is focused on moving chronically homeless individuals into permanent supportive housing. The new evaluation will continue a number of the elements that we'll present here. So three objectives from CSAT, and I'm going to kind of move a little more quickly, which sort of translate roughly into evaluation questions around, does the program portfolio increase abstinence and housing stability and decrease homelessness, for whom, which service models, and is the intervention cost effective? What are our lessons learned, and what supports or factors do grantees need for innovation and to sustain their program post-funding? We developed an evaluation framework with a socio-ecological model, along with a logic model and various components. Thinking about the client embedded in the grantee, embedded within the treatment system, embedded within the community, embedded within the sort of virtual funding entity of SAMHSA, which also has its own prescriptions. And within that, we looked at, for each of these objectives, of which levels would be appropriate to collect data on. The evaluation components were thinking about the structure, what the capacity is, what the process is, including the grant activities, proposed versus implemented, the alignment of project activities, partnership collaboration that you're going to hear about later, evidence-based practices, outcomes, looking at client outcomes, program-level outcomes, and cost effectiveness. And these are the kinds of data that you'll hear about today that we collected under each. So we did extensive document extraction, project director interviews, site visits, meetings with the project officers, used client data that was submitted, and present some of that today. And each of the presenters will talk a little bit more about some of these. Have a three-tier design, looking from an impact perspective on the 2009, so you'll hear about that. We also looked at all grantees since 2004. Actually, we did it from 2001. We haven't yet looked at these data, but we were getting data for a comparison sample. And some of the analytic methods that will be discussed today are qualitative, and using HLM models and LCA. And not sure what you were doing, Alex. So that's it. I think I made it in my...
Oh, yes.